Welcome to another conversation with, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you and your family, your loved ones are safe and sound. As we've discovered throughout these times with our football Twitter family, I think talking football has been good tonic for some of us, even though that we know it's not the most important thing going on in the world right now. It is something that helps keep our spirits up as much as possible. So last week, I had Mr. Super Kevin Campbell on to talk about the famous Survival Sunday West Brom Portsmouth game. And this week, I'm joined by one of our favourites on the Highbury squad. He's always been very gracious to us and a great friend of the show. Welcome, Mr. Warren Barton.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Hopefully, you're keeping safe. And as I said, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we have that optimism too. And Amanda and Super Kev send their love and regards to you as well, Warren.
Cool, both to them as well. They're great people. I'll make sure that
they'll be listening to this too. So thanks for joining me today. There's one game, you and I have talked football a fair bit over the years, and there's one game that I've always kind of wanted to get into a little bit more, and the conversation with are focused on just that one game. And the reason why I wanted to talk to you about it is because you were having such a great season, and even though you didn't play in this particular game, you were present, and very present actually in this season. Newcastle had assembled quite an expensive group of players. They spent 16 million on you, Ferdinand, Ginola, and I think Xhaka, Hislop as well, had come. Before we get to the actual game, Warren, when you joined Newcastle from Wimbledon, you'd worked with Ray Harford, Peter Wyth and Joe Kinnear. You're leaving Wimbledon. You'd been there a while. You're a London boy. And here you are going up north where, you know, these fans are so passionate, but also you came with a huge price tag at the time.
Yeah, it's funny that you said 16 million for the four of us seems a bargain now.
It does, especially those players for sure.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, at the time, it being a record for a defender, and Les Ferdinand coming for 6 million as well as a great striker, and then Ginola for 2.5 million, I believe, from PSG was an absolute bargain. So, as you're right, I was at Wimbledon for 5 years and had a great time there and developed from being a young boy into a Premier League player. And then moving to Newcastle and have the experience to work with someone like Kevin Keegan, Peter Beardsley, working with obviously Les and Ginola, and great players like Rob Lee that they'd had at the club for some time. And obviously inspired to try and win something. So I had a great time at Wimbledon, but it was a time then that I'd been in the England setup. We was getting ready for Euro 96. Lucky enough to start the season off well with Newcastle. But there was a lot of pride, a lot of expectation. You're right about the fans. Coming from Wimbledon, where sometimes we might only have, you know, 3,000-4,000 fans watching us, and at Newcastle at training ground we'd have about 5,000 or 6,000 people watching us. So the expectation and the pressure was huge, but something that I think we all thrived on. We all enjoyed it. When we've spoken to Kevin numerous times about how it was at Arsenal and being at a big club and expectations, I think that's what we all want to have. We all want to have that pressure of being in that circumstances, and working with Kevin. And the enjoyment that he brought to the fans and to the region and to the area, it was a real exciting time.
And it's interesting because then a few months after, I believe a further 11 million was spent on two also great signings for Newcastle, was Asprilla and Batty. So you were strengthened at that time. Let's do this, Warren. Just that season. So Manchester United did win the league. Liverpool qualified for the Cup Winners' Cup. Newcastle, Aston Villa and Arsenal qualified for the UEFA Cup. Manchester City, boys and girls, Queen's Park Rangers and Bolton were all relegated. Top scorer was Warren's former teammate, Mr. Alan Shearer, with 31 goals, Robbie Fowler, 28. And Les Ferdinand, another player who sometimes I don't think gets the plaudits that he truly deserves, scored 25. He also won PFA Player of the Year, Robbie Fowler, Young PFA Player of the Year, and your teammates Rob Lee, David Ginola, and Les Ferdinand all made the PFA Team of the Year. So here we are going up to that game, Warren. You guys are having a great season. From a personal point of view, I kind of want to hear your perspective on it because it's so disappointing. I think sometimes we fans, you know, don't realize the disappointment an athlete would feel missing out on a big occasion, especially Olympic athletes that train and only get to play every 4 years if a player misses a World Cup. But even in modern day football, missing a game like that can be really disappointing. So as you're approaching the game, talk to me about it from the team point of view and also you personally not being able to play in that game.
Yeah, I mean, building up to the game, you know, being involved in the team, played 31 games that season, had a phenomenal start to the season, went to United just before Christmas and unfortunately got beat there 2-0 with Andy Cole. And then we went into the new year full of confidence, going into a game and, you know, you expected to be involved. But at that time, like you said, with Tino Asprilla coming into the squad, David Batty as well. Kevin Keegan decided to try and change the system and probably the personnel around us a little bit. Maybe the personnel might have been okay, but I think the system should have stayed as it was. But we started to change myself, Keith Gillespie, Lee Clark. You're right, you know, outstanding players that have come in like David Batty and Tino Asprilla in particular. Wonderful, wonderful players with the players that we already had. So you're looking forward to every game and it doesn't come any bigger. At that time, playing at Anfield, a night game, being the entertainers as well at that time of the year. We was always on a Sunday or a Monday night, which let Man United play on a Saturday. And then all eyes was on us type of thing on them days. And the pressure coming along. And we trained well that week. I picked up a bit of a knock on the Monday or the Tuesday. So I think I had a day off. And then Kevin decided to make a few changes. And, you know, from that point, it's hugely disappointing. You prepare all week to get ready for the game. And then he decides to change it around. You have to try and put your personal disappointment and pride aside because you realize the bigger prize is to try and win the Premier League. And I think all of us now, all the players of that group would say we didn't really want to win it for ourselves. We wanted to win it for the region and the fans. Yes, it would have been lovely to have a Premier League medal, but I think ultimately it would have been for them fans and that area. And obviously for Kevin, you know, 99% of us have been brought to the club with Kevin Keegan being in charge. So there was a lot of affinity and connection towards Kevin. And we all wanted to perform well. So you get into a situation where you know you're not involved. You still try and prepare the same, whether you're training on the day before the game. Obviously, you don't have to get any tickets for people that want to come and watch it because you're not involved, so you can give your tickets to someone else. But you sort of try and put that brave face on and motivate yourself and just say, look, if I do get the call, I'm willing to come onto the field and help the team out. It was a little bit strange for me, as I said, because I've been involved virtually in every game. But Kevin decided to change things around because we'd lost a bit of momentum, and me and two or three others was maybe the way that he wanted to change it around and swap his personnel. Building up to the game was phenomenal. Having them special nights at Anfield, unless you've been involved, it's hard to experience that. And a lot of the Arsenal players would have had it, and particularly Arsenal fans going up there and that famous game with Thomas getting the goal at the end and, you know, great games they've had against Liverpool in the past. And I think everybody, all the big clubs enjoy going to Anfield at that time. And I know as a player, scoring a goal at both ends, actually lucky enough to do that and come against a good Liverpool team. And the fans up there are magnificent. The noise that it generates around the stadium. But it was a special night in particular with the lights on, knowing what's at stake. We needed to try and win to keep pace with United at the time and to keep that gap trying to grow. And arguably one of the best games in the Premier League ever, I think, when you think about the quality of goals. I wouldn't say quality of defending, but the quality of goals, the quality of entertainment end to end, the finishing that some of these players have shown. As I said, the style of football end to end, it was very much like we live in the US, like an NBA game. It was like you score, we score. Was there any tactics? Probably not. But it was a wonderful game. And I don't feel sorry for Stan Collymore, but it tends to get overlooked, the ending of a game with Aguero, of what he achieved for Manchester City winning the Premier League. But that arguably one of the most dramatic finishing I think you've ever had in the Premier League. I know Aguero will get it, but for Stan, and then to see his celebration, and then the camera went to whoever was directing it, was magnificent, going to Kevin Keegan, slumped over the boards with his head. And that's how we all felt. I think if you look at the bench, you look at the fans, it wasn't anger. It was just huge disappointment. And to be involved in a game. But as I said, there were some outstanding performances, particularly by the Liverpool players. Robbie Fowler comes to mind, and obviously David Ginola was phenomenal. And, you know, I chat a little bit more afterwards, but me and David had a chat in the stadium afterwards when Anfield was all empty about the disappointment about the game.
Oh, wow. Well, okay, don't forget that, because we'll get there when we get to the end of the game moment, because I wanted to kind of talk to you from the point of view as well. So not only have you had a massive impact on this season, you've played 31 matches, you've come in as a record defensive signing, but now you are sitting helpless because you are carrying a knock and you're watching your teammates play a Liverpool team. And when you look at both teams, Warren, I mean, it's laden with stars everywhere. This game is really, for me, you know, if I'm from a pure enjoyment point of view, as someone who doesn't support Liverpool or Newcastle, it was brilliant. And my hairs are going up just thinking about it. And I completely agree with you in that Collymore's finish was a superb finish. I don't think it does get enough credit, but Robbie Fowler does score first.
Now Collymore. The ball has swept back his cross. It's a goal. Robbie Fowler. What a start for Liverpool. Cernicek had no answer there. It was a great cross by Collymore. Drew out the goalkeeper. The goal in the second minute.
And it's interesting when you're talking about system and personnel, because a lot of criticism that has come Kevin Keegan's way is that, yes, you guys were labelled the entertainers, but you really had a plan B. But you rode on this kind of bravado and this pizzazz and this flamboyance of football that, you know, a lot of the times Pep Guardiola and Arsene Wenger get a lot of credit for the flashy football. But that Newcastle team, for you, I mean, do you feel like in your football career, especially, that was as good as it got? That was the best?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. And the reason we don't maybe get linked with Pep or Arsene Wenger, we didn't win anything. So that's always, you're judged on winning things. But as for entertainment, I remember me and Les, you know, in the first couple of weeks, we're going to training and the ball was flying around and people are passing it one touch, flicking it around the corner. And me and Les, we just sit there because I've come from Wimbledon, he's come from QPR. I said, I haven't touched the ball today. I couldn't get near it because it was that. It was that, you know, play, move, pass, make angles. It was a joy to be around. And you've got 4,000 to 5,000 people watching you train. And you've got Kevin Keegan, who's actually sometimes sitting with the fans on the hamburger stall watching you train. So it was really loose. It was fun. Everybody used to get into training about 8:30 and stay until 2:30, 3 o'clock, because we wanted to be around each other. We had a great team spirit. We always wanted to train well, enjoy ourselves as a group of players. Socially, we got on really, really well. Even now, with social media, we're still good friends with a lot of the players that are around. And that's not always the case because, you know, in the professional game, sometimes you're just acquaintances. You just have a season, 2 years, you move on and go somewhere else. But genuinely, I think from a man all the way through the team, we genuinely liked each other and wanted
that's
the
awesome.
Best. And we got on really, really well.
That's great.
As a group of players, and it was fun to be around. And you know, you just go on the tactics with Kevin. You know, I remember sometimes we'd have team talks about other teams, and sometimes I'd look at the other team and say, "Just go and play. Just go and beat them." There was no real, you know, when we lose the ball, can we have a bit of shape? There was a little bit on defensive corners, you know, but you're talking 20 odd years ago where. It was the Liverpool way that he was brought up with. We're better than them. We've got better players and we're win the game. The game's changed now. It's evolved. And you mentioned one of the people, Arsene Wenger, started doing that in the mid-90s when he came into the Premier League about how fit the players was, the, you know, different systems and how athletic you had to be. And, you know, he was a real trailblazer in a lot of the diets and the systems and, you know, whether he played three up front with Overmars at Anelka and Ray Parlett, you know, so he really changed a lot of ideas. But Kevin was brought up on the Liverpool old school way, the boot room of, you know, we play, we train well, we win games. But that's basically it.
So I digressed a little, but it's only because when I get involved in these conversations, there's so much rich content. When you guys start talking, it's unbelievable. So we do, let's go back to the game and that system, because in the end, some will say it's the lack of response that is what bit Newcastle in the butt, you know, that season. So Robbie scores, Ferdinand ties it at 1-1.
Asprilla, he's got through here. Ferdinand! 1-1! 10 minutes gone. And Asprilla has set up the goal for Les Ferdinand. And it was a really sharp finish from the England striker.
Then Ginola gets the second. Super sweet move. Ferdinand had this magical pass from the outside of his foot.
A flank move again by Newcastle. Ginola is through. Ginola with a finish! And from being a goal down as early as the second minute, Newcastle have turned this game on its head. 14 minutes gone. David Ginola.
I do feel like sometimes Les Ferdinand gets overlooked, and I don't know why, but he was a very special player. What was it like to play with him? And at that point in that game, when as much as Ginola was so good, was Les really the guy? Who? There's always one guy, right? Was it Les or was it David?
Actually, I'll go back. Peter Beardsley was our main guy. He was the one that we looked at to try and get, because then he could then give it to Ginola, give it to Les. I mean, Les was a phenomenal player. Anyone that, you know, Ian Wright in particular is a great friend and of me and Les as well. He was a phenomenal player. And, you know, at that time, you said you've got Robbie Fowler, Les, Wrighty. They couldn't get in the England team. So that just shows you how the depth and talent that you had coming through. You had Alan Shearer obviously breaking all records in the Premier League, but Les was phenomenal, and I was lucky enough to, for 2 years we lived with each other. He lived at my house, he'd have dinner with me and my wife, and he would drive down to London to see his family, and he's nothing but a gentleman. And I think people realise that his quality in the air, his touch was good, he could score goals, left foot, right foot. He had that great smile, a good-looking fella. He had everything going for him, and a very likeable fellow as well, and down to earth. And you know, you know, people like that are going to do well after football. And a top-class player. Alan was more ruthless, and we've had this conversation. Me and Les actually said, "Like, what's the difference between me and him?" He said, "I think Alan's just more ruthless. He's just totally driven to score goals. Les will try and bring someone in, and not to say Alan won't." But when there's a chance, Alan will take it. Les may second guess and think, well, I'll lay it off and I'll give it to someone else. Alan don't. Alan just met. And that's probably the difference. Les was better in the air. He was quicker, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, I was lucky enough to play with Les for a couple of years, Shearer for 6-7 years. So I was playing with some good strikers and played against some good ones as well. Yeah. Some good times.
Okay, so, you know, Ferdinand's having a huge impact of the game. Then Fowler strikes again. The famous net celebration runs into it. He was a really good player. I mean, wow, what a player.
It was a great call there. Here's McManaman taking on Albert. And the shot is a goal! Fowler! 2-2! And Fowler with that instinctive finish. 2 for Fowler, 2 for Liverpool.
What a play he was. But then 2 goals in 2 minutes and Asprilla nails a super perfect pass from Robert Lee, another player I think that he was a great teammate, it seemed, Rob Lee, and he was a very unselfish player, but also such a great protector. And then you're 3-2 up away.
Oh, a super little pass there. Here's Lee. Asprilla, he's timed his run. Asprilla! In 2 minutes, and this astonishing match has swung back Newcastle's way yet again. Liverpool caught cold.
At that point, what are you thinking? Are you are you trusting the system and the personnel that was changed and the faith that Keegan had put into these particular players? Or at that point, were you still a worried team even when you had that cushion?
No, I think our mindset was, let's get another one. Because for the whole year, 2 years, and some of them players have been with Kevin for 3 years, is like, we just keep going. We go forward. We've got them on the rack. We can get another one and that'll kill the game off. We was never, ever going to be a team that keeps possession and strangles the game out with possession. Our first thought is to score goals. And that was from fullbacks pushing on and playing as wingers to Peter Beardsley playing in the hole and running in behind Les Ferdinand. So wherever we was going to play, it was going to play until the end to try and score goals. There was never a thought of seeing games out. Again, that goes back to a group of players and maybe the coach as well. Kevin never wanted us to try and stifle a game. You know, as I said, we was enjoying it so much. We wanted to go forward. We wanted to express ourselves. We wanted to entertain the fans.
Warren, did players ever think that was naive sometimes?
Yeah, to be honest, I've spoke about it before. Me, Les, actually, and Peter, it was about February time. We was all sitting together in the changing room. And I said, do you not think we just need to win games? Just scrap out a game. And Peter was like, Kevin won't let us do it. We don't want to do that. That's not what we do here. So it was like, okay, all right. I'm only a suggestion, but it was never, ever seemed to be like that. You know, I've been at Wimbledon with Joe and Ray Hartford where it was about grinding out, staying in the Premier League, competing, making it difficult for teams, respecting other teams so we can exploit their weaknesses. So I was brought up on the other end of the scale at Wimbledon, really, is to try and exploit people's weaknesses and keep our strengths, where Newcastle said, we ain't got any weaknesses, we just go forward. And that was a weakness because it was Achilles' heel. And that's, you know, as teams got a bit more aware of how we play, that we'd isolate our two centre-halves, a bit like what's happened with Pep now, with City. You know, a lot of teams are saying, go on, use two push forward, the two full-backs, and we're getting the two centre-halves and run at them and take our chances. And, you know, as good as our centre-halves was, where Peacock, Howie and Philip, when you got three people running at you, it's difficult to take up. And someone as quality as Robbie Fowler in front of goal, he only needs half a chance to put it in the ball in the back of the net.
Take me into the dressing room, a Keegan dressing room, in a game like that, especially against Liverpool, the magnitude of it, the whole, you know, the Man United, Sir Alex Ferguson stuff, you know, it's 3 points. You guys have been on this amazing run. Take me into a Keegan dressing room in that moment, that game.
Before the game, it would be lighthearted. It would be fun, joking. Terry Mack as well. The two coaches, the two, number one and number two, Kevin and Terry Mack, was very, very similar. They was very jokeable, very fun, orientated. You know, you normally have a good guy, bad guy.
Good cop, bad cop.
Exactly. We didn't have that. We had two good guys that wanted to have fun and have a joke. And sometimes we was really loose, and that's how Kevin would be, you know, enjoy these games, enjoy the moment, look at the stadium, there was, you know, not a lot of thinking about the game that's coming ahead. It was about enjoying the moment, enjoying the environment, enjoy what you're doing with the nation watching, that type of thing. So there was not much about on the board about set pieces, about, you know, look out for this. We knew their team. They knew us. We knew them. But there was not much of, can we exploit here? Can we? It was get it out to David, give it to Les, give it to Peter. We win games. It wasn't complicated at all.
Wow.
In the sense of how the game was seen. So before the game, very, very low key, very fun, enjoy it, relaxed, a lot of joking, go out, do your warm up. Then I think the players took over. Kevin would back away and let the players get psyched up and ready because you're professional players. So you get into your own routine, you get ready. One or two words before we'd go out. Again, more about the enthusiasm of the game, loving the game, the passion of the game. Half time, there was a little bit more of like, we just need to keep the ball a bit better. Mm-hmm. We don't need to keep turning the ball over. And then after the game, there was, devastation. It was quiet. Because he was very emotional, you know. And I remember Arsene Wenger saying this sometimes afterwards. It's like, who lifts the coach? You know, the players get lifted by the coaches. The number two gets lifted by the number one. But who lifts him? And we looked at Kevin and he was devastated. He was devastated about the result. He was devastated about how they scored the goal in the dying seconds. And he probably, in a pit of his stomach knew that that was probably the final nail in the coffin. Who are, you know, I think the United game was when it all turned, when they beat us with Cantona. But Kevin probably thinks that was, you know, the nail in the coffin, and we was never really going to bounce back from that. Although he came back later with the rant about we're not going to give it up. I think it was such a killer blow to lose that game how we did.
Yeah, it crushing, devastating blow. And Collymore made it 3-3. There was still 68 minutes at 3-3, Warren. And I mean, at that point, I think most people were thinking, wow, this could end up 5-5, 6-6. I mean, it was crazy.
What a good ball in. Collymore! Liverpool 3, Newcastle 3. 68 minutes gone. And this, without question, was one of the matches of the season.
You know, what I didn't realise when I was doing a little bit of research on the game is that Ian Rush was still playing in that. He was in 96. And you forget about Ian Rush, and because in that game you had Robbie Fowler and you had Redknapp and you had all these younger players that were coming through, and Rush comes on for Rob Jones, and a typical Liverpool move in the dying minutes. And could you see it coming from where you were watching? Could you see that moment play out? How? And then, you know, he scores, and then obviously Keegan falls over the advertising board. I'd love to hear your fly on the wall moment of that goal.
Barnes, now Ian Rush. Barnes again. Rush just wouldn't sit up for him. But here is Collymore. Liverpool have won it. An amazing finish. And Keegan just cannot take it in. What a finale. Stan Collymore. And surely now, Liverpool have the points and are back in the title race.
You could sense it, you know. And Rushy coming on, I mean, he ended up playing for Newcastle as well for a year later on in that, I think it was about 97, 98. So he come to us. And that was just a turnover because people like John Barnes was just leaving, Mark Wright was coming to the end of their career. And then the younger players was coming through at Liverpool. And then you could just sense they had the momentum. We, again, I'd love it to be like we were living in America, have a timeout, because we was all over the place. We just needed to get our heads together a little bit. And for Kevin to pull us over, we might have come round a little bit, but we couldn't get a grip of the game. And you could just sense we was getting nervous. As I said, kept turning the ball over. Liverpool then sensed it, as you do as players. You sense that they get a little bit of momentum. And we was all just praying, really, to get out of the game, not losing it. If we got a point out of it, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. I think at the end of it, when Kevin did that, and if you went back to all the bench, we'd all gone down, we'd all slumped, and just couldn't believe it. You know, just total shock, devastation. You know, we knew we didn't have time to get back into the game. We was all exhausted, actually, sitting there. I remember, you know, the next night, you know, just going to bed and exhausted, because it was so entertaining and falling, but it just drained you, because you had every emotion through your body going into that 90 minutes of a game.
You know, a lot of the times, you know, people talk about being so near and yet so far. To know how close you were to a Premier League title, and to know that you had the team, and really, you really were, obviously other than Manchester United, but you were one of the best squads, not only I would say in England at the time, but you were really lighting it up and garnering fans from all corners of the earth because of the way you played. Do you feel if you'd have just stuck to the original system and he didn't change it up right at the moment when, why, if it isn't broke, why try and fix it? Do you feel any of that, Warren, a little bit?
I'd be alive if I didn't say yes, I do. Now, I'm older and wiser and done coaching badges and, you know, seen the Premier League from where it started to where it is now, and the tactical side, and everybody wants to see what Pep's doing and what does Klopp do and what did Arsene Wenger do and what did Fergie do so well. There would have been a bit of me. Bottom line is you're judged on winning things, and I never won anything. We had a great chance of winning the Premier League, and would I have given away some of our 3-2s, 4-2 games, of course I would have done. I think if you don't, you're a liar, because you want to win the Premier League, and you know you want to be part of being a winner. And again, with the fans that we had and the resources that we put into the team, we was a joy to be around. And as you said, the fans and even the granddad collar shirts, you know, that it become fashionable, and it was just part of a special time, yeah, in that area with the Premier League booming as it is now. And I wish we could have done something. And every day you wake up and wish, you know, could we have done this, or could we have changed it? Even at halftime against Man United when we lost 1-0, you know, instead of Kevin maybe saying, look, let's go and prove again, because Les had hit the crossbar, Schmeichel had made 3 or 4 great saves, the world-class saves. Instead of saying, right, we ain't losing this game now, make sure we don't lose it, and we've still got 7 or 8 points between these. It wasn't. It was go out there and let's show these, and we got done by a sucker punch. And then we lost at Nottingham Forest, and then so on and so on. So do I look back with great affinity and affection with the time? Yes, but ultimately you're judged on winning things. But that's part of the game, the professional game that we're in. And that's my mentality, that I wanted to win things. I left, you know, Wimbledon to try and win something. And I was lucky enough playing cup finals and runner up in the Premier League twice and playing Champions League and UEFA. All them type of things are great, but I would love to have won something. There's no doubt.
You're listening to a conversation with here on Highbury Squad, Sophie and Warren Barton, former Newcastle player, going through a classic game, Liverpool 4, Newcastle 3. We're going to get him out here on the next few questions. He's been very generous with his time. And when you do look at that season, Warren, does it make you think about, wow, we were there almost for 1 year? And when you look at what Sir Alex Ferguson did with Manchester United, in that time, does it amaze you that he was able to do that? Obviously, they had great resources and stuff like that, but you still have to be a great manager to do it over and over again. Does it kind of amaze you that he was able to do it consistently after you've been through a season like that?
I'm lucky enough to, you know Sir Alex and, you know, work with Sir Bobby Robson, who was a good friend of his. So my initial answer would be, yes, you'd be surprised. How can he be able to? But knowing Fergie and knowing people like that who are at the top, it's not a coincidence that they do it, because they've got a set plan. I always remember Sir Alex saying to me when I was getting to coaching, he said, if you coach, get good people around you. Get people that you trust around you. Trust your players. And, you know, what he did with the likes of, you know, Brian Robson, Pallister, Bruce, Irwin, out they go. Let's bring in Neville, Beckham, Butt, Scholes, Giggs. You know, they had a conveyor belt. But he'd been planning why that Bruce and Pallister to go and get the best young kids in England to Manchester United. So when they was ready, so he had a plan and he knew exactly what he was doing. Once they left, they knew about getting then the foreign better players coming in, the likes of Ronaldo. Now, he was ahead of the game. You know, so Arsene was like that as well, going to get, you know, Anelka before other people knew he was, the French market, tapping into Patrick and Thierry Henry. Yeah. So, you know, now everybody's trying to catch that gem, that player, but they'd already done it. And knowing Sir Alex and being around Arsene Wenger, being around these people, it doesn't surprise you, because that's what makes them what they are. And that's, you know, you go against other coaches and you can see, I can see why you got fired. I can see why you didn't be successful. So, you know, when you look at these guys, these coaches, how well they do, it's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence that Belichick keeps on winning. It's not a coincidence that, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson won, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. But for us, Newcastle, I think what's happening to Spurs, and a lot of your listeners will love this, we never really got over it for a long time. Although we finished second the year after, then we got to a cup final, 3 semi-finals, etc. We never got over the hump of winning it. Where Chelsea got over the hump by winning something. Man City got over the hump by winning the League Cup. You know, Arsenal, when he got it, winning something in that first couple of years. To get over the hump, then you've got something to fall back on. We never really got over that. And I'm not sure whether Spurs are going to get over that for a while, the way it's going with them. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Newcastle fans to hear this, but it's a fact. And, you know, it took us some time.
It really does affect a team. Look at even in American sports, and I know you love American sports, but Kyle Shanahan could have had two Super Bowls back to back, but for some reason, you know, couldn't get it done, calling maybe bad offensive plays when he was at the Falcons. And then, you know, the Niners having that situation in the last Super Bowl. And again, you know, it's just not easy to win. Otherwise, everyone would win, right? Everyone would have medals. Mm-hmm. Everyone would have everything. So I did want to get you out on this because, and thank you so much for looking back down memory lane with me. I mean, this game is such a significant, important game in Premier League history, and two fantastic teams with amazing fan support. And I know you have a tremendous amount of respect for Newcastle and Liverpool. And I also know we're living in a really difficult time, Warren, and it's so easy to point the finger at people when really we've never been through something like this, and there's no blueprint or answers to how we're going to handle things. And the financials of everything is tough. You've got, you know, stadium workers, you've got restaurants, you've got hospitality people. I mean, it goes on and on and on. We've seen the record this week in terms of people in the United States signing for unemployment is 6 million plus. It's crazy. I did want to get your thought on this ongoing discussion about Premier League players deferring their salaries. I think also sometimes people don't realize that people have their lives set up a certain way, no matter what you earn or whether you're a billionaire, a millionaire, you're middle of the road or not. You have your life set up a certain way to make payments for things and live your life. So they're coming under scrutiny. You're an ex-player. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'll go back. So when Derby County, I finished my career, me and Rob Lee was at Derby County, a Premier League team for 6-7 years. And then, unfortunately, we got relegated in April. The next day, we was asked to take a pay cut because there were some people at the club that was not going to get paid through the summer. So we had a meeting of a group of players. This is early 2000s. And we offered to take a deferral with our pay cut because it would give the club and people at the club a chance for 6 months to try and get ourselves straight, to try and balance the books. And that's a club that's been a stable in the Premier League. You see what happened to Leeds as well. And people can say, well, hold on a minute. What, you know, how can you be a club and overspend? But you do. You know, that's part of what running businesses is like sometimes. You speculate to culminate, and obviously it didn't work out for Leeds in particular. If I was a player now, and I was a PFA chairman for a couple of years, and I was involved in the TV deal when Sky really come in with big money, the PFA, the union, Professional Footballers Association, was asking for X amount from the Premier League. Obviously, the clubs wanted all the money, but as players, we wanted to invest it in education, players that, you know, couldn't afford to have operations, that had been in the game in the 50s, 60s, 70s, that, you know, unfortunately was coming on hard times. And the union there really was there to help them. So we was great at the time. The likes of Shearer, Beckham, Owen all stood up, Terry Henry being one of them as well, said, no, we're going to stick together. And the bottom line is we ended up, you know, getting the money off the Premier League TV deal to give into the union to help the players. I now think a player should defer some of his money. The chances are, and, you know, just to let people know, they will get that money back. There will be a guarantor of getting that money back. So you're only deferring it at the moment. It can't happen overnight. So, people say, well, why don't they do it? There has to be a legal matter. You're not going to say, well, I give a third of my money away and I'm never going to see it again. You do get that money back, but it takes, a 10-day period to make sure legally it's all okay. Because of how Premier League players are scrutinized and seen, because of their money. Not everybody earns Ozil's money, but they all earn good money. They all earn good money compared to the man working on the street or the woman working in the streets or in offices.
Yep.
My thing would be if I was a player, I would say, okay, right, we will do this and defer our money for 6 months, a year, whatever it is for the length of this time that we have to stick together and get through this. But so does everybody else that earns over 250 grand a year, 300 grand a year, 400 grand a year. So if you're working in the city or you're a CEO of a successful business, let you do it as well, because we're all in this together. And players are obviously, and you know, rightly so, because some of the pictures have been showing that they're working out in these big houses and everything else. But that's part of being a professional athlete. You know, LeBron James has done it over here. There's been other, Tom Brady's been doing it, and you know, throwing balls in the back of his yard and you can't see the end of his garden. But that's that's just part of being a professional sportsman or a successful businessman. So I think from that point of view, as a player, yes, we would do it. Yes, I would give some of my money to make sure the lady that makes the cup of tea, the people that wash my kit, the people that are parking the cars, the people that have got some money on the in their paycheck to get through the next 2 months, 3 months, or however long it must be, 6 months, I would do that. But I would also ask the people that are in that heavy bracket to do the same. And I think there's nothing wrong with doing that. And I think that's where players are going to get penalised and scrutinised and being vindicted by what they've earned. Okay, that's part of being in the public eye. But also these other people that are earning millions and millions of dollars as well should help out. And some of them are. Listen, some of them are. You know, we've got people over here that are doing it. But I just think it's unfair to go after one category when arguably there's a lot of people that are in the same boat as well.
I completely agree with that. There's no reason why the chairman of Coca-Cola or you know, British Telecom or the bank, Barclays Bank, you're absolutely right. Golfers, why aren't people going after golfers who earn a tremendous amount of money? Formula One. It's very easy sometimes to pick on footballers because I think there's been this stigma attached to, you know, the money, the flamboyance, you know, a lot of all of that. But it's at the same time, I think because of how Tottenham handled it, Warren, the knives kind of came out, and maybe
it was like Newcastle did it straight away. You know, again, if I was at the club with the likes of Alan, and we would have sat down with the chairman and said, look, let's work on something here. Let's get, you know, Gordon Taylor, PFA, let's sit down and see what we can do without laying these people off. You know, Levy's done it now, and it goes on. Bournemouth have all took a pay cut because it was the unknown. And you've said it, no one really knew what was going on. And then it was like, well, we've got to make a cut now. You know, we've got to do it now. And, you know, we can't get paid. Well, you know, okay, let's sit down, let's work it out, and then make sure that these people do. Because I'm sure if you asked Harry Kane to sit down with the Tottenham players and say, look, we need X amount to keep these people involved, they would do it. They would do it because they know when the government and they help the people out, or even if it's a goodwill to say, yeah, you know what, I'll give some of my money to help out these people for 3 months, they would do it. And that's the problem, is that the media and people get on social media straight after the players. Listen, so players don't help themselves with these silly cars and glitzy stuff. And that's, you know, that's, we see it with, you know, whether it's rappers or people into entertainment. I remember all the actresses were saying, you know, we're going to come out and support people. We're not going to wear makeup for 2 days. Really? That's the biggest thing you're going to do? Yeah, you know,
it's exactly.
a little bit more to life than that. And I think that's what's made this time people reflect about what's going on. But I think you have to hear the whole story, and I would take it. I don't know, but I would think someone like Harry at Spurs and other players would sit down, the captain of the football club would say, look, we need to do something, fellas. You're going to get it back, but we need to do something to keep these people with food on the table. And I think everyone to a man, a person would do it because they realise that the football club is about the fans and about the people inside the club. It's not about the 11 or 12 running on the pitch. It's about the whole football club.
Brilliant stuff. Warren, top shelf human being, firstly, top shelf footballer, and some of the best stories. Always love talking to you about the beautiful game. Stay safe and good luck to you and your family. And hopefully the next time we'll talk with Amanda and KC too, it'll be about a Newcastle v Arsenal game, and obviously, hopefully, the Gunners will be victorious. Hopefully,
yeah, go back the one when we beat you 3-0.
There's a few good ones in there that we can.
I won't mention about the 5-0 when you beat us at Highbury, but other than that, it was fine.
Yes, see, now we're equal. Now we're equal. Thank you so much, Warren. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right,
pleasure.
Bye-bye. Bye.